I'm Matthew McCabe. Welcome to Miracle Voices. Each episode, we will be delving into stories of forgiveness, healing, and transformation that have come about from integrating the principles of the book, A Course in Miracles. If you want to learn more about A Course in Miracles, visit www.acim.org. If you'd like to visit the Miracle Voices site, please go to www.miraclevoices.org. If you feel inspired to make a love offering, please visit us at miraclevoices.org/donate. All donations go to support the work of the Foundation for Inner Peace, the publisher of A Course in Miracles. Now here's your program. Hello, this is Matthew McCabe with Miracle Voices. I'm here with my co-host, Tam Morgan. Tam, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well today.
Oh, good.
I'm very happy to be here.
Oh, good. And how I guess doing? I'm doing good. Okay, good.
Glad to hear.
And the podcast is over. We just wanted to let everybody know how we're doing. Thanks for listening. Only kidding. We have a guest today, Manu Puri. Manu, welcome to Miracle Voices.
Thank you. It's a total delight to be here. I appreciate it.
And we're glad you're here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think everyone will be glad you're here.
We usually like to start out with Manu and just hear how A Course in Miracles came into your life.
Thanks, Matt. There's a short story and a long story. The short story is back in 2016, I was getting into non-dual kind of literature, and someone at a party spoke to me about the disappearance of the universe. But, and I know you've all discussed it so many times, and Gary's been on this podcast too. And so I hadn't heard of the book. And so we started talking about A Course in Miracles and the disappearance of the universe. And I shared with my friend that, you know, I tried reading the course, but hadn't quite gotten into it. And based on that recommendation, I grabbed the book, read it fairly quickly, and was totally taken by it, as you can imagine. And so that led me down A Course in Miracles path very rapidly. And then from there, it's been just a very deepening journey. And here I am. I've been reading it and practicing it as best I can since then, to some amazing results.
And what's the long version?
Okay. So the long version is so I grew up in India, and I was very fortunate to have been in a family that was a very liberal Hindu-focused family, focused as in not as a religion, but more as a way of living. And but it's not like it was practiced on a daily basis. We just had the traditional and some aspects of it strewn into our daily living. And so as I grew up, I had this sense, I just knew that there was a God. I just knew that there was some order in the universe, and that I didn't necessarily was fully aware of it, but I just had that sense. And I was, even in my teens or early teens, I was drawn to literature of the kind that was mystery-based and religion-based. So I grabbed all kinds of books on UFOs and the extra-normal and some of the Hindu texts, such as the Gita and some others. And then as I grew up, I also grabbed other books from other traditions, including Christianity, a little bit of Judaism, a little bit of Islam, you name it, Buddhism. Then we were also very fortunate. Well, growing up in my teens, my father had come to New York. He was in New York in the mid-70s, and because he was going through his green card process, which ultimately took him a good 6-7 years, he barely visited us in India. He actually only made it once during that span of time. And the reason I mention that is because that's what, so I was missing a father figure for those times, for that period of time. And that's when I really started deepening my connection with God. And I naturally drew to God as a son would to his father. So I knew, started to know God as my father. And so that was a pivotal moment, or those years were pivotal, because I felt the need for a father, but didn't have one physically. And so fast forward a little bit, we ended up in the States in New Jersey. And I always asked God to help me understand the truth, the real truth, as it is, as unblemished as it would be possible. And so my journey continued. I got introduced, I stumbled upon the Urantia Papers, which I studied and in a sense practiced for a long time. I came across, in the early 90s, I was a voracious reader and continued to do so. I stumbled upon A Course in Miracles. I bought the whole set. Even though I had read the Bible and was familiar with the language, it seemed the language seemed very arcane and wasn't quite understandable. So I left it sitting on the bookshelf, and then it sat there. And in the early 2000s, as I started to get into Kindle technology and such, I actually donated the set to the local library, because I said, I'm pretty good, I'm studying all the other stuff. Also, another pivotal moment in the early 2000s was the 9/11 incident. Until then, I'd been meditating and studying, but not in any kind of a regular fashion. 9/11 was a big trauma, in a manner of speaking. And so that really shook me up and got me to start practicing meditation and prayer regularly. So since then, I've been meditating daily, which turned out to be an amazing thing. And so my study deepened, my practice in some ways started to deepen more. And I was still steeped in the Urantia Papers and things like Buddhist texts and the Hindu texts. And then fast forward to 2016, as I shared previously. So that's a little bit of the longer story.
And what does your meditation practice look like? I'm curious, just because I've always got the monkey marching band with their cymbals every time I try. I'm able to do it for about 10 minutes with this little biofeedback device, but I wouldn't call it great. I would call it novice for sure. So I'm curious what you do.
Well, and I'm no professional at it or no pro at it either. When the Urantia Papers were big in my life, there was a movement, there still is a movement called the Teaching Mission. The Urantia Papers, like A Course in Miracles and many other revelatory texts, are, in a manner of speaking, channeled, right? And so there were a number of channelers across the country and across the world who were a part of this teaching mission. But it really sprang from the Urantia movement. And the teachers that came through those channelings always said that stillness is your meditation practice. And so my effort would always be a little bit of a prayer, a little bit of reading an appropriate text, and then just settling down to try and be still. And obviously, it was just like you said, Matt, it was the monkey mind, and it still is sometimes here and there. But that practice slowly over time deepened. And a few other things happened, which really clarified my, what you might call my life purpose, you know, from a professional and living standpoint. And so, so the practice itself has changed in the last 5 years. And I can talk a little bit more about that if necessary.
I'm laughing in a certain way. The your Urantia book came, you know, before A Course in Miracles, I believe. And the head of the organization, I can't believe I just forgot his name, but I thought it was Ben, but I'm not quite sure. I was on the phone in conversation with him, with my mother, and he was asking my mother about the foundation's business plan. And he was just so impressed, you know, publisher to publisher, how everything we did was word of mouth. Theirs was similar. And how ours took off so quickly. To say ours feels a little funny. But in any case, A Course in Miracles really spread wildly by word of mouth. And, you know, the foundation was formed around its publishing. And he asked my mother, you know, would you mind, is this really inappropriate to ask, but I am so interested in your business plan. Love to know what it is. And my mother said, oh, I can show it to you very easily. And he said, really? She said, actually, I can tell it to you on the phone. And he said, really? She said, yeah. And she said, we don't have one. Never have. And he said, what do you mean? You're a business. She said, I know, but when we asked to have a five-year plan, a usual business plan, we were told very clearly, and anyone could read it in Helen's special notes, we were told there is no need to have a business plan. What the need is always to listen, and I will tell you what to do, when to do it, when you need to know it. If you pay attention to what's going on in 5 years or 10 years, you probably wouldn't do the job that is needed to be done now, because this course may be so so unrecognizable. It will take so many forms. So stay in the present and just keep asking. And that's been our business plan. So we once wrote up one just for some funding purposes, but still don't have that business plan. Always are asking for guidance. So that's my connection with Urantia.
Yep. I love that story. And, you know, that's the simplicity and the power of A Course in Miracles. It's here and now. We listen, we act, and we move.
Yeah, completely. Now, when you say that your family, you came from a liberal family, I know what that is, like in Judaism, what a liberal Jewish family is. But what does that mean? I'm assuming that it was a Hindu family. Mm-hmm. By practice, and what does it mean that they were liberal?
I think by definition, Hinduism is largely a liberal way of living because of the way India developed. As you might know, it was invaded by many different forces over millennia, coming from Europe and the Middle East and Central Asia. And so the country was literally forced to accept all ways of thinking and religion, for that matter.
Or certainly accommodate.
And at least accommodate. Yes, yeah. Yes. And so our family was more of a typical Hindu family, as in my parents never told me to pray a certain way or believe in a certain God. We were very open. And then if I heard the stories from my grandparents, they were also like that. They would be very open to Islam and Christianity. And so it was just evident to me that, and, you know, another thing that I like to share here is the practice of namaste. You know, we hear the word and we use it quite often. And it's most amazing, Pam and Matt. I had known the meaning of namaste, which, you know, which means, and I think we've discussed this in the past, the spirit in me bows to the spirit inside you, or the spirit in me recognizes the spirit in you. And what's most amazing is that that's also the essential Course in Miracle practice. We are supposed to recognize the spirit that we are and acknowledge the spirit that might be standing physically in front of me. And so that's, in essence, is Hinduism, and that's the kind of upbringing I had.
Mm. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. I really wonder.
Yeah, Manu, would love to hear. Go ahead, Tam.
Sorry, I just wanted to say as an aside that it made me smile when I heard you say that you were interested in books, you know, mystery. And my first thought was like, I loved Nancy Drew series, which was a mystery series and a whole different kind of mystery than what you were talking about.
Well, I read all of those too, Tam, growing up. I read all of the Nancy Drews. I read all of the Hardy Boys. I read a host of other similar series.
And love that. It was preparation.
Me too. Absolutely. I read the Hardy Boys.
Yeah. Preparation for deeper mysteries. You know, yeah, you read those, you voraciously read those, you digest them, and you want a deeper mystery, and then a deeper mystery. Yeah.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Over to you, Matt. What were you about to say?
Well, I was going to say, Manu, would love to hear your forgiveness story.
Yes. So, forgiveness, you know, we've discussed in the past what forgiveness means normally and what forgiveness means from a Course in Miracle perspective. And so that's been just a deepening understanding. And I'd like to maybe clarify what forgiveness means to me currently and then answer your question.
Sure.
So forgiveness to me currently means that I am accepting of anything and anyone and everything that's going on. So if someone's in front of me or if something happened in the past, I'm just fully accepting of who they are. And if something unsavory is happening in front of me, I'm trying to be as accepting of life as it occurs. So growing up, I think there were a bunch of forgiveness stories that one could recollect. But more specifically, in the terms of, you know, how the practice of the Course worked for me as I got to understand it since 2016, I started applying its principles at work and at home and with everyone. And so there were a couple of instances at work, for example, where I had a very tough business stakeholder who would give me grief for everything that we were discussing and would ask questions that were unnecessary or would just make life difficult. And what I started doing is, with her, I started to practice the Course. I started thinking of her and thinking kindly of her. I started to picture her in my mind. And I, if you may remember, Gary Renard has this amazing forgiveness practice in which he says something like, if you are encountering another individual or if you're thinking about them, you say something like, you are Christ, and an innocent spirit, and all is forgiven and released, something to that effect. So what I did with that is I made it my own, and I created my own practice in which I started to, because the Course says, as we all know, that we are essentially one. So when I start thinking of that individual, I would say, you are spirit. You are an innocent spirit, and I am forgiven because you and I are one. I am forgiven, and we fully embrace that was my creation, so to speak, of that same method that Gary shared. So I would utter those words in my mind, or I would think of her in a loving manner, and I would keep saying that. And when I would speak to her in business meetings, I would also, in the back of my mind, or even actively in my mind, have that sense that I'm speaking with Christ, I'm speaking with Spirit. And so this has happened more than once. I can at least relate at least five different stories where things would transform literally miraculously. And so in this particular case, she suddenly started to become much nicer with me. And without much aplomb, she just left the company. She just left the company and went to another job. And that was the end of that difficult situation. You know, that's one example of a forgiveness story that I experienced.
That's a great outcome for someone that frustrates you. They turn nice and then leave. I love that.
Yeah, literally disappeared.
That's so beautiful.
Disappearance like of the annoyance. Practice. Yeah.
It's the practice I would give my son about a bad dream. Like, turn it around, make it something lovely, and let it just disappear.
So, Manu, you said you are spirit, you are an innocent spirit. I am forgiven because we are one and we are released. Is that what you said?
Yeah, it goes like this. I say something like, oh, innocent spirit, I am. And as I say the words I am, I include that person and myself. I am completely forgiven and embraced.
I like that. Yeah, that really helps to see the other as yourself. Sometimes I do, this makes some people uncomfortable, but sometimes when I'm having an attack thought about another person, I picture my face on their body, and to help me realize, like, wait a minute here, we're all one. But I think I like your way. It's more helpful.
Oh, and I love your suggestion too, Matt, the way you practice it. That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we have time for another forgiveness story. If you have another one, Manu, if you have one on deck.
Yes. So this other one is one that I mentioned to you previously, Matt. It has to do with my wife, and it's an ongoing story, but it's a beautiful story, I think, because we'll be married 30 years by the end of this year. So it's been a long, beautiful. Yeah, it's been a long, beautiful marriage with its typical ups and downs. And so one of the things that, because I've always read spiritual, quote unquote, spiritual literature and things of that nature, I'm one of those readers who hardly ever reads any fiction. So I'm just like totally addicted. And I'm addicted to this kind of stuff, which is definitely a problem as well. So in the last 20, 25 years, my wife had grown resentful of that, because I would, you know, righteously tell her, oh, you shouldn't be doing this. This is a better way of doing this. This is how you think about other people, or you treat other people. So I was very righteous, and probably still am. And so showing up that way created a lot of resentment in her. And then to boot, she had some traumas that she dealt with growing up, and had a difficult set of parents, and had lots of issues from that perspective. So we would spar and we would fight. And then over time, I thought I was getting a little bit better, and I would, in a sense, forgive the situation and move on. But she would tend to hold, at least from my perspective, she would tend to hold her resentment for longer. So especially after the course came in, And there's a little bit of another story that I'd like to tell after this one, which I think is relevant as to why the course means so much to me now. So as I started to practice the course, and I did the same practice, I've had a couple of incidents where she and I were fighting, and then she would stomp and go outside the room and, you know, move away from me physically. And I would do the same practice that we mentioned before. I would practice it. I would just close my eyes and sincerely pray. And at least, actually more than a couple times, almost instantly she would come back, or soon after my practice, she would come back. And, you know, we would make up right away, and she would apologize and I would apologize. And I think the greater miracle, in my opinion, is that especially since I started practicing the course, and because of her own growth and because of her own forgiveness lessons, she has now turned and started reading. She doesn't read the course, but she started reading all kinds of other literature and has started practicing meditation. And I make a lot of fun of her now, saying that, hey, you used to make so much fun of me. Now it's my turn to make fun of you. So that's like the biggest turnaround from my perspective.
Question. How come she's not reading the course? I love that she's not, by the way. You know, it took me about 60 years to get to it, but not quite. But what is her reason?
So her reason is that, so everything that I've read in the past, like a lot of the stuff, so I'll give you a specific example and then I'll answer your question. So one of the books that I really enjoyed was by Michael Singer, and, you know, we mentioned it before, The Untethered Soul. So that was a book that I came across probably 10 years ago, and I really loved it and practiced it. And so when she saw that book, she would say, oh, this is ridiculous. This sucks. And, you know, and then later on, if I were listening to something from Michael Singer or some other author that I have shared with her, she would make fun of it. And so currently, I think, first of all, we know everybody's curriculum is different. And so currently she is not drawn to the course. She's made fun of it until a few years ago. And, you know, just in terms of the language and what she hears. But the current joke between her and I is that I tell her that it's just a matter of time before you start reading and practicing what I am currently reading and practicing, because that's just how it is. And I actually shared with her a concept, Tam and Matt, I shared the concept of a holy relationship with her. And I told her, and we actually sat, I said, this comes from A Course in Miracles. And we actually sat down a year or two ago. This was during the COVID lockdowns. And, you know, we held hands and we prayed together. I told her that, you know, the reason we are together is because we need to really join as husband and wife, and then be in service. To what service specifically, we don't know necessarily, but we need to be in service of the greater intelligence. And so, long story short, she's not reading it yet, but I predict she will one day.
Well, that's the biggest thing to keep her from doing it. I'm sure she really appreciates your righteous predictions and
yeah, imagine
adding, you're giving her extra time to not come to it.
True that is so true.
Please tell her I feel for her completely.
I will. Empathize.
And she can do it next life if she even wants to, or not at all.
Yes
All that matters is that she's coming to a path of love with you. And I just think of myself, you know, if my husband said to me, so this is going to be the path, sooner or later, you're going to do what I want to do with it, what I am doing with it. And I just want you to know that. And the amount of love, openness, humility, and care that she must have just to even enter the path is really quite remarkable.
Yes, I think it's miraculous. And Tam and Matt, the other story that I wanted to tell briefly is that back around 2014, 2015, my practice was going strong, I thought. But there was always a lingering fear. I would feel a fear in the area of my chest. And it would happen when, you know, things apparently didn't go as well, or sometimes things were going perfectly and I would still have that lingering fear or feeling of discomfort. And so that's what I brought to the Holy Spirit and to the Father. And I said, you know, I really need to figure this thing out. I need your help to, I want to be fearless. I want to get rid of this fear once and for all. And that's soon after that is when I had that encounter with my friend, and I started reading The Disappearance and The Course after that. And as I practiced forgiveness on a regular daily basis, I essentially started to give all my experiences and my fears to the Holy Spirit and in every way possible. That's when I started to not feel that fear and started to feel more and more peace. And that was like, as I start to feel this peace on a daily basis, I said, yes, this is the promise of the Course. And that just gave me more motivation to keep practicing and keep applying.
Huh. And you also emanate that peace. It's really a beautiful thing that you share with other people.
Yeah, thank you. That's, yeah, I just love being in that peace and then practicing the Course actively, because it just multiplies the peace for everybody around us.
Yeah.
It seems.
You make it look good, Manu, because, you know, I came from a family, including my mother, that were very into drama. And I remember my brother's greatest saying that, you know, when a kid says something and it goes on and on in the family as a joke, was that he was following my mother from room to room, talking, and it was driving her crazy. And she was going to each room and he kept following her. And she finally went into her bedroom and literally closed the door. And he was so upset and he knocked on the door and she opened it up. She said, enough, stop. You know, you just can't stop talking. And he said, yeah, but am I boring? And she said, no, you're never boring. And so there was this feeling that was bred into my family of not to be boring, and that linked with drama. And so the idea of being peaceful somehow equated itself with being boring. Yes. And it took a long time to find that not only is that not true, there's an irony in it, because you can be completely peaceful amidst massive entertaining chaos in your life, if you choose to find it entertaining, but that peace is in itself such a for me, valuable, attainable goal, even to experience that over loving the drama more. And it's a big shift in whether I suffer or not.
Yep. And it's, my wife comes from a family that is full of drama artists. And so she's just like that. And again, we make fun of that. And she tells me, you know, how boring would your life be if I wasn't like she is, right? And so, and I said, yeah, that's true. And yet she, you know, she's now on that path and recognizes the value of being peace and being at peace. So the other refrain that she had is, oh, so you want me to be like a saint. You want me to turn into a saint and be perfect in every aspect of living. And of course, she knew that I wasn't one, but she still had that refrain.
I would love to meet your wife, Manu. She's just wonderful, full-spirited. I also love how you call it a drama artist. Our usual expression is like a drama queen or a drama king. But I really like drama artist. I think that's a fantastic way of putting it.
So Manu, when that fear comes in that you were talking about, you pray to be fearless, but when it comes through and kind of gets you feel it in your body, can you talk about how what you do next when you feel it like stuck in your chest or anything in your anywhere in your body?
Yes, sure. So over these years, the last 5-7 years, I also studied some authors who were teaching embodiment. And a couple of the Buddhist practices showed me how to include my entire body and my whole feeling, let's call it the feeling body, into my and within my domain, so to speak. You know, it's like we know that we spend a lot of our times in our head, and then we are exhorted to include our heart, which is a large part of the greater intelligence, and then the practice is to really, so as I start to feel that fear, and I have to say that, you know, last few years, I have not been feeling it much at all, thanks to the practice and its results. So, but still, if I feel a fear and it shows up in my chest area, I acknowledge it. I let it do its thing. I include the whole body in it. I said, I essentially give it permission to expand and release itself. And I acknowledge the Holy Spirit and in essence, handing over the fear and the full experience of it to the Holy Spirit, which is acceptance and which is forgiveness. And it just dissipates. So I'm not holding on to it. I'm allowing it full sway. And I let it merge into the rest of the universe, so to speak, leaving my body in practice alone.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. And that's what a helpful thing to be able to do. And have you found that it sticks around less and less now that you know how to do this practice? Just goes faster? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Is a my phone is stuck ever since my mother passed away. My phone is completely stuck on the same lesson all the time. And I always have to bring it to the whatever lesson I'm doing. And it says to me over and over again, I am at home, fear is the stranger here.
Yep. And love that.
It just reminds me daily whether I want it or not. And my mother, that was the lesson she repeated most towards the end of her life because she had so much physical pain. She really held on to that one.
By the way, Tam, I acknowledge Judy as my spiritual grandmom.
Oh. And
that's how I think of her because we all, you know, obviously love her to death, so to speak. No. We just love her. And I have enjoyed every single podcast of hers, Matt and Tam, right from the get-go. And yeah, so
yeah,
I think of her every now and then.
Thank you. Yes, this was her absolute greatest, one of her top two greatest joys. Towards the end of her life was doing this podcast because no matter how much pain she was in or anything, and I would say, Mom, don't do it, just relax. The moment she was on, she didn't remember her pain. Mm. And that was incredibly fascinating to her.
That was true. There's
out of it.
She even before she would like before we hit record button, she would say like, you know, that exactly that, Tam. She's like, this helps me. It's like, helps me just be clear and free. And it's amazing how that works.
it was astounding. It really, really was, because, and she, I mean, she did bring that to all of her work. I think I've told this story before of on her last day, where she was having a massive heart attack. And she insisted she wanted me to speak with her and to get to know our German publisher. And she literally had me mute the phone. So she was screaming in pain. And then she would point to unmute it. And then she would talk like a normal human being who wasn't in any pain whatsoever. And then, you know, point to me to mute again. And then she'd go, ah! It was one of the funnier moments. Like, I really felt for her pain, but it was so funny. And talk about like drama queen. It wasn't her fault. Her body, I mean, she really was having massive heart attack. And there it was. And that split that you could completely enter your service and everything disappears when you're in that alignment. And then there comes the ego again, you know, attacking the body and everything else. So, you know, I did want to confirm that she adored doing this with the symphony. She also adored doing the symphony group. Those were her two favorite things, where she would show up no matter what state she was in, physical state.
Yep.
That's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Manu, you have really some nice nuggets here. Forgiveness story. You were able to do like a little sampler platter or poo-poo platter here of different forgiveness stories. We appreciate that. We got three quick nuggets in there. Before we let you go, we'd like to ask, and you also told us how you dissipate the in your chest when you get that fear. So you helped us with a practical forgiveness step, but we have the tradition of asking a comfort food now. What's your favorite comfort food?
Thank you.
I know we've talked about dessert and all kinds of things in the past. I love any kind of dessert. I love dark chocolate with, so one of my favorite comfort dessert foods lately, which is also healthy, according to me, is...
nice asterisk. Yeah.
No, actually, it's pretty good. So I take a date and I pit it and I open it up. It's a large date and I stuff some really good and rich dark chocolate inside it, and I make a sandwich. And
that's so wonderful. I would just add a piece of bacon around it, stick it in the oven, and it's amazing.
Yeah. So, comfort food in general is, you know, it could be a great hamburger. It could be some amazing barbecue situation that I'm enjoying. You name it. We are a true foodie family.
Well, I suggest, and I'm really not kidding about the wrapping a piece of bacon around it, putting it in the oven. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about that particular recipe or that particular way of enjoying it. I'm with you. Yeah. I love bacon.
I've heard of this. What is that? So you're saying dark chocolate with a date wrapped around, and then a piece of bacon wrapped around it.
You might have to cut the bacon because, you know, the bacon is too long.
It's wrapped around it like it's hugging the date.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Is there a name for this? It feels like there should be.
Manu's
Chocolate
Delight.
Date.
We call it Manu's Delight.
No, we'll call it the Miracle Voice Delight.
Okay. That's great. Thank you for sharing that.
Manu, thank you for everything. Thank you for coming on, sharing your miracle voice and all your forgiveness stories. This is wonderful. Is there any parting thoughts or ideas you have that you want to share, or Tam either, in the final moments?
Yes, I'd like to share a couple quotes from the course that I pretty much read every day. And they bring me a lot of peace, and like to share those. So the first one is from workbook lesson 135. And I'm sure we've all heard these. So it goes like this. What could you not accept if you but knew that everything that happens, all events, past, present, and to come are gently planned by one whose only purpose is your good. That's one. And the second one, which is the very beginning sentence of chapter 15 in the course. Can you imagine what it means to have no cares, no worries, no anxieties, but merely to be perfectly calm and quiet all the time? Yet that is what time is for, to learn just that and nothing more.
Those are nice. Very peaceful way to end, Manu. Thank you.
Yeah, almost as good as the pig, the fig, and the chocolate.
Tam's been thinking about this.
Yeah, I can tell,
but that's pretty good. You're close to something there, Tam. I think one more step.
Pig, fig, dig. I haven't had breakfast yet, so I'm going to go enjoy that soon.
Yeah, you can do it with figs as well as dates, just so you know. thank you, Manu. These are gems, complete treasures, as are you. Really appreciate it.
Yes, Manu, thanks again, and enjoy the rest of your summer. Thanks for coming on Miracle Voices. Thanks so much for listening today. Please subscribe to Miracle Voices by hitting the subscribe button on your podcast app. If you are enjoying these conversations, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use. And lastly, please visit us at miraclevoices.org and join our newsletter so we can stay connected. Until the next podcast, I want to leave you with my favorite course quote, "When you want only love, you will see nothing else."